I, Mesentius, once king of Cherry, smile today at the more recent desire to give fictitious names to ancient things. That was done by those who not so long ago rediscovered the ruins of the City of the Dead, where I wander alone in one of the oldest necropolises in the world and one of the largest in the Mediterranean area. Banditaccia, they called it. Such a deceptive name. You may think it derives from the activities of bandits living in this area centuries ago, but you would be wrong. This land, ever since the very first settlements, was a place of peace and cohesion among populations with similar needs. It was only in recent time that the name Banditaccia was given to what we simply called the high ground to the north, a plateau of tufo stone covering about 400 hectares, which today is home to many thousands of graves. From the oldest, dating back to the 9th century BC, to those of the 3rd century BC. Banditaccia is a derogatory term that comes from the leasing, or bando, of areas of land to the people of Cerveteri by local landowners about a century ago, without knowing that where death wanders for centuries, no crops can grow, and the grass is too poor for animals. An area that was then spurned due to its lack of natural resources, but eventually, it became explored, admired, and revalued over time. At the dawn of the year 2000, the necropolis of Cerveteri and that of Tarquinia were recognized as masterpieces of humanity's creative genius and listed among the most fascinating examples of cultural heritage offered in the known world. Such glory is deserved. Given the beauty of Tarquinia's breathtaking murals, an art in which we Etruscans were masters, and given the strict logic of the town planning system used to design the Cerveteri necropolis. But that's enough of the modern events. I'd rather you concentrate on what you're here for. So, follow me along the Via degli Inferi, or Streets of the Underworld, the main road that runs through the whole area 2 kilometers long and surrounded by numerous entrances to burial chambers. Talking about Banditaccia involves, yet again, discovering traces of eras that, alas, no longer exist, and touching inevitably on the theme of death. But among the graves and burial chambers, there are also traces of love and married life in times past. Look at the so-called sarcophagus of the spouses, today a masterpiece of our funerary art. A container for ashes that depicts a life-sized sculpture of a man and a woman attending a banquet. The banquets. You can't imagine the feasts I held in my home, attended by the most powerful families of the day. But there'll be time to talk about our social rituals later. For now, I would like you to concentrate on the presence of that woman sitting at the table. I must tell you about the women of my time. So mistreated and repressed by the Greeks, but so respected and honored by the Etruscans. It was a privilege for us to have them seated at our table. They were the ones in charge of the house and the servants when they weren't busy doing even more important work. I remember Kusnai, the owner of a pottery workshop who supplied my home with cups, amphorae, and pitchers excellently handcrafted. She was what you would call today an entrepreneur. a career woman, independent and proud of her work. Traces can still be found today of her name and her work in the part of the Banditaccia accessible to visitors. The area that can be visited today is called the Fenced Zone. It covers about 10 hectares and houses around 2,000 tombs, including the best preserved examples from various eras. Let me take you to visit Banditaccia through my words and your imagination. We'll pass from the simplest and oldest graves dug in the ground, destined for the less well-off segments of the population, to the much larger tumuli-type tombs dating to the 7th century BC. Those were intended for aristocratic families, but today people have given them modern names, different from ours. The Maroi tumulus, the Polychrome tumulus, the Mengarelli tumulus, the tumulus of the Colonel, the tomb of the hut. Modern inventions for something that we simply called by the name of the deceased or the family put there to live forever. I'd love to bring you on a tour of the tomb of the Greek vases, the tomb of the small house, and the tomb of the cornice. Perfect examples of the decorated and embellished burial chambers typical of the 6th century BC. And to tell you about the cube tombs of the following century, which gradually replaced the large tumuli and housed deceased members of the ascendant middle class. These tombs are arranged in a regular pattern along the sepulchral streets, standing perpendicular to each other. And finally, I would lead you into the Tomb of the Reliefs, the most representative example of the Greek influences in the Etruscan area, which took place in the following 2 centuries, in the 4th and 3rd centuries BC. To this day, inscriptions bear the name to the Matunas family, to which it belonged. You can still admire walls and columns decorated with colourful and well-preserved stucco reliefs. On them are realistic depictions of everyday objects which offer a glimpse of the lifestyle of aristocratic families at that time. So does the Hypogeum of the Tamsnia family, and the Tomb of Five Chairs, showing small terracotta figures of men and women making ritual offerings. I'd love to tell you about this and much more, because Banditaccia is close to my heart. But alas, I cannot, because I still have so much to tell you about the other large necropolis of Cerveteri, Mount Abatone. So I invite you to follow me once again to listen to the words and the voice of someone who for too many centuries remained silent, contemplating a past that can only return today in the form of ruins, or by using that magical invention that you call virtual reconstruction.